Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, July 16th, welcome on Into the Show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Only one welcome. That is really disappointing.
I was like, maybe I'll switch it up.
Because this is going to be a good show.
Yes, it is.
It deserved multiple welcomes.
I'm Avi Wolf-Manarin.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Actually, three welcomes would have been appropriate,
yes,
right?
Because
we're talking about third parties today. Go ahead.
Yes. Today, we're going to be talking about third parties in our political system. Elon Musk is floating the idea of a new political party, the America Party. And while Musk's vision remains unclear, what is clear is that Americans are dissatisfied with both Republicans and Democrats. A Gallup poll finds that 58% of Americans want a third party. And voter registration data shows nearly 43% of Americans identify as independents. So today, we're going to talk about, is this moment in America, are we ripe for a third party? A viable third party, an actual party that wouldn't just be a spoiler. We're going to ask that question. And we have a panel that includes a reporter, a political science professor, a former Republican who stepped out of her party to join a new party. And so we want you to join the conversation. And our question of the day is this: could a third party ever be viable in American politics? And do you think it would help or hurt our democracy? The email is studio2@whyy.org. The phone number is 888-477-9499. And if you're watching on YouTube, hello, leave those comments in the chat. So, third parties. We talked about this once before, but the moment was different. And
yeah.
And now there's so much more division. People so dissatisfied. Could now be the time?
Well, the most popular parties in America are pizza and ice cream, followed by birthday and block. And then somewhere way down the list, you get
birthday
Democrats.
Birthday and block, especially in Philly.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But somewhere way down the list is Democrats and Republicans. That hasn't seemed to matter in the past, though. Democrats and Republicans haven't been popular for a while when you ask Americans whether they approve or disapprove.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, what would make this moment different? I think Elon Musk's money could
maybe
be the answer to that question.
Maybe.
It could be Donald Trump's presence and the kind of political outcasts he has created through his presence. It could be lack of vision by Democrats. The Democratic Party is very unpopular. You never know. But also, we're going to get into some of the history because a lot of these efforts have failed in the past. Before we get to a trio of parties, a trio of local news stories, Cherry.
And you kick us off.
Let's start with this one. A major center city infrastructure project could be on ice thanks to federal budget cuts. This project is called the Chinatown Stitch. It would cap a segment of the Vine Street Expressway and therefore connect Chinatown to areas just north of it. This project is dependent on about $150 million in federal funds. But Councilman Mark Squilla told the Inquirer those funds have been eliminated in Trump's mega budget bill. Now, this project's still in the planning stages. It wasn't scheduled to break ground until 27 or maybe 28. Squilla hopes the planning part can continue and maybe by 28 the funding comes back. But this project clearly in peril now, Cherry.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about 95% of federal funding just kind of gone, I mean, and it does stand out because according to the reporting, no one from the federal government has even reached out and said, you're not going
to
get it. They haven't
like
heard anything.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, this project was a pretty big deal for the Chinatown community. This was supposed to right past wrongs and all of that. And so now it may or may not happen. And it also raised a lot of flags for me because we don't know all the things that are really going to be impacted by the big, beautiful bill that became law. And we're starting to feel some of those reverberations as, you know, people sort of unpack what's really in this 950 plus page bill. So we'll be checking that out, too.
There might be more revelations like this in the coming days and weeks. But look, Chinatown is in a vulnerable situation right
now.
That was highlighted by the arena that never was.
Mm-hmm.
And people got very worked up about the arena. I would submit that you should be maybe as worked up about this because this was going to be a very big deal for potentially reuniting this neighborhood with a part of Chinatown it was cut off from back in the 80s and early 90s when they were building the Vine Street Expressway. Very damaging project for Chinatown. And we work right around Chinatown. We're there all the time.
We do.
And, you know, anecdotally, I would say it does not seem to be thriving as it once was.
No.
And so this, like I said, a vulnerable time, and this would not help, you would think. Okay, story number two.
Story number two. Some big money donors are apparently helping to fund the renovations for the Pennsylvania governor's mansion following that arson attack that took place this past spring while Governor Shapiro and his family were asleep inside. You know, this is a cause a lot of people agree with, but the only problem is no one knows who those donors are. And that's according to a story published today by Spotlight PA. Let me just explain how this all happened. Apparently, the five living former governors of Pennsylvania, they got together to hold a fundraiser not far from the governor's mansion back in May. But this fundraiser was invite only. And the Harrisburg-based nonprofit that collected the money, they're called Team Pennsylvania. They have declined to disclose who attended the event, how much money they raised, or what the money will be used to fix or repair. A spokesperson...
Because some of this will be paid for with taxpayer money, insurance money.
Insurance, exactly. So we don't know, right? But a spokesperson for that organization says, look, they'll pay for anything that the insurance doesn't cover, right? At the same time, they said that at some point, they're going to publicly thank all the donors. And at that time, we will, you know, provide a list, but no one knows when that time will be. And, you know, it raises some red flags because there's been this opaqueness around.
It's part of a pattern, is really.
Who supports Governor Josh Shapiro? If you recall, when he had his inauguration party, there was also a nonprofit that had donors that no one knew who those donors were for that party. And people have been asking questions. Of course, Spotlight PA did reach out to the governor's office. They said this is not an issue right now. You know, we don't even know how much the repairs are going to cost. We don't know how much taxpayers will have to pitch in. And so once we know more, we'll provide you more.
I think it's less about the repairs or this one project or this one fundraiser than it is this organization, Team Pennsylvania, which, by the way, predates Josh Shapiro.
It does. It's been helping other governors, too.
Ridge formed it. Governor Ridge formed it. But the idea that people can give money to this nonprofit and then the nonprofit could, for instance, help repair the governor's mansion, send the governor to the Super Bowl.
Which
to represent,
it did in 2023.
Right. And it could be a way to sort of, without any sunlight, curry favor with the governor. Mm-hmm. No one says that's actually happening. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of a blind spot. And, you know, we do have these blind spots with elections as well, but there are certain disclosure rules around elections, at least. Maybe certainly not enough, many would argue. Mm-hmm. But with this, there's like, no rules.
Yeah, and you don't know how much money, you don't know who, so there's just a lot of questions here.
Sure. Okay, third story. A lot of questions about this one, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, I wanted to give an evil laugh. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, Damiano Micheletto is an Italian opera stage director known for making very provocative choices that sometimes offend audiences. For instance, Cherry, at one of his operas in Milan, people were so disgusted they threw their pamphlets onto the stage in protest. And you know, when they start throwing pamphlets at operas,
they're upset. That's big mad. Mm-hmm.
So best I could tell, this guy, Damiano Micheletto, is like the bad boy of opera stage directing.
Ooh.
And this September, he is going to make his American directing debut right here at Opera Philadelphia with an opera called Il Viaggio a Reims.
Ooh.
Ooh, look at that photo of him in the New York Times. Doesn't he look like a bad boy?
Yeah, he looks very bad.
Very bad. Mm-hmm. Okay, So there's some intrigue around him staging this opera in Philadelphia, first time in America.
So what's so special about this opera?
So he told the New York Times that he does not think this particular opera will offend many people. Uh-huh. However, he did say that there is a scene in the opera with three topless ballerinas, although he would consider taking that out of the show if asked. So now
RCT.
I'm very curious.
Okay, RCT.
I'm very curious if Opera Philadelphia will ask him to remove that scene and if he will comply. The bad boy has arrived in Philadelphia. Is the opera scene ready?
I would say yes. And I ask, who's going to ask them to remove the scene? I don't think anyone will, because, by the way, Opera Philadelphia has a leader, Anthony Roth Costanzo, who's the new executive director, and he's been trying some very provocative things. Mm. For example, the pay as you will. Okay.
I remember that.
You remember that? That rolled out. They sold a reported 10,000 tickets in 3.5 weeks. And he has said his goal is to get butts in the seats and a little
Would
RTT.
Topless ballerinas help
RTT
accomplish that?
RTT might help.
What's RTT? I don't know.
RTT.
What?
Toplessness.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wait, what?
Toplessness in the name of art.
RTT. Oh, okay.
Artsy.
I heard, yes. RTT.
No,
I thought it was some acronym that I wasn't hip to.
RTT toplessness.
Got it. Yes. I'm interested. I'm interested. I'm interested in this, like, not in a like a leering way. I'm interested in whether someone will ask him to compromise his vision on this particular scene.
It'll be interesting. I would say no. My prediction is
I have never been so intrigued by an operatic directing choice. Coming this September to Philadelphia. Also coming up after this break, third parties. We're going to talk about them. Stay tuned to Studio 2.
We'll be right back.
These days, there's so much news. It can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back, party people, to Studio 2 here at WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aarons.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Way back in 1856, the Republican Party held its first nominating convention just a few blocks from here near Washington Square. 4 years later, the GOP captured the presidency. And since then, not a ton of change in America's political power structure.
Could a third party emerge in this country and stick? Well, the story of the Republicans shows it's possible, but the last 150 years proves it is not easy. Elon Musk says he's up for the challenge. He's proposing something called the America Party. Meanwhile, in New York City, Andrew Cuomo is trying to win the mayor's race with a third party bid.
Polls suggest Americans are open to the idea of third parties, but history has not been kind. Could a third party ever be viable in American politics? That's our question of the day, and we want to hear from you. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, put those comments in the live chat.
As we ponder that question, let's welcome our first guest, Teddy Schleifer. He writes about billionaires and their impact on the world for the New York Times. Of course, he's reported plenty on the mercurial Elon Musk. Teddy, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And so, Teddy, is Elon Musk the guy to launch this viable third party? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much that would be viable, and I think Elon is going to kind of discover that over the next couple of months if he tries to turn this into a real party. I mean, the more pro-Musk argument is that he has been spending a lot of time recently trying to find kind of leverage. Maybe you find a couple Senate seats, a couple House seats where a third party could be viable, and you know that is easier than electing, you know, a third party president or a third party mayor, even someone like Andrew Cuomo. But what if he could find a House race or a Senate race where he might be able to get a little bit of leverage, and then encourage Republicans using that leverage to be more fiscally austere in a way that he finds the Republican Party not to be. But I mean, this is going to be a challenge, and obviously it's not something that you can just solve with a ton of money, but the money does help.
Yeah.
It's really hard when decoding what Elon Musk does and says to determine how serious he is. Mm-hmm. So I guess, could you lay out an argument for, yes, he is serious, and this thing in the past proves that he would actually follow through, and then the counter argument to, no, he is not serious, and this failed thing in the past proves that he is not serious. Like, kind of like the two sure. potential interpretations of what he's done so far.
Yeah, and the line between those things can be very, very thin. I mean, I think the best example of a not serious thing becoming serious is his purchase of Twitter in 2022, where, you know, Musk was egged on by, you know, kind of trollish friends and accounts online. But, as of today, after an extraordinary financial transaction and litigation, he owns Twitter. And, that has had a huge impact on the public discourse, and it is, been an enormously influential business transaction that sort of started, not as a joke, but it was not like he did not, intend for
It
this to
seemed
happen.
like hot air when it started, but it
And
became
then it
very
wasn't.
real. Yeah.
And Elon loves this saying, that the most entertaining outcome is the most likely, which he's said repeatedly recently as he's been floating this third party idea. Elon, though, floats tons of things that he does not actually follow through on. He says, that he's going to start a newspaper, or, he is talks about his desire to get involved in various political projects privately, and then it doesn't follow through on it. And he has said, right before July 4th, that he was going to start this third party, and he has not done so yet. And based on my reporting, I have not encountered any evidence that he's actually operationalizing this, that he's actually trying to start a third party right now. I think he is talking about it, but it will be very hard. And I know some people around him are trying to let him know that it will be very hard.
Yeah, he hasn't
Good
filed
luck.
the FEC paperwork yet. By the way, Aaron comments he needs to shut up and build cars. And this poses my question to you, like, so does Elon Musk actually have a following, like people who would join this party, this America Party with him? Who are the folks who make up the crew, like the fans of Elon?
That's a good question. I mean, yes, Musk does have a following. He has, kind of a, at least pre-Trump, had a very kind of pro-technology, very male, very white kind of group of kind of people who were amazed with Tesla and SpaceX. And, he has a cultish following in a way that some of the people I cover do not. I think what's hard, though, and the complication, at least for Elon right now, is that his political identity is so twisted by Trumpism, where he obviously spent the last 6 months to a year allying himself with Trump's movement, which repelled the left, but now he's kind of an outcast in Trump's movement, right? He is somebody who is disliked by a lot of members of Trump's base because he's been, floating theories tying Trump to Jeffrey Epstein and stuff like that. The other factor here, even regardless of what people think about Elon personally, is that what he's pushing for, as a policy matter, is very unpopular. I think he is pushing for, or pushing for he's pushing for something that seems popular on paper, which is budget ba b b balanced budget and for kind of more significant spending cuts. But Trump doesn't want spending cuts, right? Or the spending, he just obviously signed this bill into law that's gonna balloon spending even more. So I think independent of Elon. Trump, I mean, Musk is kind of pushing for this, sorry, independent of Trump, Musk is pushing for kind of this far right, budget cutting Paul Ryan economic agenda that is not very politically popular.
Yeah, I was curious about what he has said regarding what the agenda would be. I've seen the stuff about the deficit and cutting federal spending, but you mentioned, right, that his original appeal, the cult of Elon, was also built around A, his success as an entrepreneur, and B, this kind of like techno-utopian future that maybe he could help build. Has he tried to incorporate any of that into the brand of what he's building with this America Party, or is it really just debt, 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 deficit, 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 balance, budget, balance, budget, balance, budget?
Yeah, it's not totally clear because this party just doesn't
Doesn't
exist yet.
exist
But I
yet,
mean,
right?
but I mean, but to be, to take it at face value, the idea for the party was born out of Musk's frustration with the One Big Beautiful Bill. He felt that the Republican Party showed that it did not care about the deficit and did not care about, he thought the Republican Party showed it didn't really care about DOGE and kind of the effort to make government more efficient if, they were going to pass a bill that was going to kind of erode a lot of the savings that DOGE had made. Does Elon have other positions? Of course he does. I mean, on immigration, on crime, you can just look at his feed and see what he cares about. But I think it's been very, driven by budget kind of concerns recently, which is an aberration from kind of what Musk traditionally has cared about, which has been,
Exactly. That's kind of my
the climate
point.
issues and things that are, not so kind of right coded.
Yeah, to me it would be a sign of seriousness if he started to expand the agenda of what he thought the party might be about. As long as he's only talking about this one thing, which, like you said, is not necessarily even his traditional brand, it's hard for me to take it as seriously. Yeah. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah. I mean, I don't take it. I mean, I take it seriously somewhat. I mean, I'll take it seriously when he starts actually kind of making moves to do it.
Yeah.
Which he might. I mean, yeah, he might.
And by the way, Luann from Glenside says Elon Musk party, quote, ain't going gonna go nowhere. That's what Luann from Glenside has said. I wanted to sort of talk about some of the other third parties that have sort of reached out to Musk. And while they, you know, I mean, they've struggled, some of these other third parties, clearly, but they see Musk as a beneficiary, possibly. Could you talk about that? And would he be someone that would sort of glom onto an already existing third party?
Yeah, well, I mean, a huge problem for third parties historically is ballot access, where, you know, there is a, you know, what Musk calls the uniparty, where you have two parties that are sort of working together to keep out other parties. There's an element of truth to that with regards to ballot access, which is that, you know, there is the Democratic Party, which has, you know, state parties and all over the country, and Republican Party nationally, and, you know, but elections are run by states and essentially and run by counties within states. And the issue for a new party, if you call it the America Party, is you know, the signature requirements are really hard, and you know, money can solve it to some extent, but obviously the Republican and Democratic parties will be resisting a third party entrant, or presumably will be resisting a third party entrant. So there's a lot of reasons why this is hard to do. And that might mean you might want to kind of use one of the existing third parties, you know, the Libertarian Party, which is, I can talk about that all day, but that group is not, it has some kind of profound disagreements with kind of people that, are libertarian themselves. Like the Libertarian Party is not a great representation of people who are actually libertarian. And then there's very, you know, it's complicated. In some states, some other parties might have ballot qualification. But yes, it is hard. And that's why, another reason to be skeptical of the Musk effort.
But he has reached out to Andrew Yang, because we're going to talk about the Forward Party coming up on the other side of this break. But he has reached out to Yang, or Yang's reached out to him. What's the reporting around
that?
I don't know
how serious to take that. I mean Yang and Musk have been in touch somewhat. I don't think that
they're in a group chat, maybe, who knows.
Yes, I've reported that Yang has been in touch with Musk. Musk has also talked with Curtis Yarvin, who is a kind of a far right thought leader or intellectual. He's casting about, you know, at this point. But you know, I think one reality around Elon, if he's serious about this, and the reason why he might end up kind of with a new cast of characters around him, is a lot of the people who work for him are currently Republicans, and they're ambitious Republicans, and they are not people who want to throw away their entire career in Republican politics to kind of do this quixotic third party bid, which is probably going nowhere. So if he wants to get involved and, you know, do this enormously complicated political task, that's going to require probably working with people who are not Republicans, because that would require, you know, the interests of kind of Musk might diverge from the interests of people who are working for him.
Yeah, as we get ready to close out this segment, I just wonder, what would be your prescription for Musk if he was really serious? You know, if you were to say, look, you got to do at least these couple of things to make it a reality.
Yeah. I don't think his idea is bad to focus on a kind of a few races. You know, I mean, I think my primary counterargument to that would be that theory of change really takes for granted that you're going to be in this very narrowly divided political chamber, or in the House, the Senate, where, like, you know, if Elon Musk picks up five seats in the House and, you know, there's only a 3-seat majority for Republicans, suddenly Musk has, you know, the balance of power.
Yeah.
Right. But what if, you know, Democrats take the House in 2026 and have a 30-seat lead, which is possible? You know, I mean, like then suddenly, Musk does not have much power.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I would definitely concentrate on a few seats.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting strategy. We're going to talk about that more on the other side of the break, whether that's a way to start a third party. Teddy Schleifer is a New York Times reporter covering Musk and other billionaires. Really appreciate your time today, Teddy, on Studio 2.
Sure thing.
By the way, call in 888-477-9499. The question, could a third party ever be viable in American politics? We'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We have been talking about the new political party Elon Musk says he's starting, the America Party. And now we want to broaden the discussion to talk about the viability of third parties in our political system generally. Lots of people have tried over the years to create national political parties, from Teddy Roosevelt's Bull Moose Party to today's No Labels and Forward Party. So far, however, not a lot of success.
So why is it so hard to break into the two-party system? What headwinds do challengers face, and what lessons can be learned from past attempts? Here to talk about third parties and third-party candidates is Ben Berger, professor of political science and executive director of the Land Center for Civic and Social Responsibility at Swarthmore College. Ben, welcome to Studio 2.
Great to be here again. Thanks.
Yes, we also have Lindsay Williams-Drath, the CEO of the Forward Party. Lindsay, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Cherry.
Nice to
thanks
see you.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and to you, our listeners at home and elsewhere, the question of the day is, could a third party ever be viable in American politics? And have you ever voted for a third party candidate? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the live chat.
Ben, we just went through the graveyard of failed third political parties. And I'm curious just if you think there is something baked into the cake in our political system that makes third parties especially hard to start and sustain here in America, whether it's something in our Constitution, something in the way we fund political races, federalism, you know, whatever you want to go with. Is there something that makes it inherently hard to do here?
Yeah, people and politics, because it's not in the Constitution.
just those two? Okay, great.
Simple matter.
Yeah, people and politics, great.
Because it's not in the Constitution.
Yeah.
The founders didn't anticipate parties. So really, it's the parties themselves, the two main ones, that have put this very strong lock on the box. They've made it difficult. Ballot access is different in all different kinds of states. But also, just look at the rules of the game. Just the one that everybody knows about, pluralism voting, plurality voting, or first past the post. It's winner take all. So it's very difficult to get anyone to be motivated to vote for somebody outside the two main parties that have name recognition and money and organization. Because if you don't get one of those two people, you don't get 10% of the vote. If your party got 10% of the vote, you get 0%. That's why it's sometimes perceived as being a wasted vote, and that's why it's been so hard to stick around.
Yeah. I want to kind of go back in time, because we sort of set this up, the show up a little bit, talking about the Republican Party. They weren't always a major party. In fact, they were a third party that came in and broke in to the political system. Could you take us back, you know, to that time? They had, you know, a major thing to rally around, that was the abolition of slavery. Like, can you take us back to that time, and why were they so successful in being able to break into the system?
It's really significantly the absence of the kind of codified at big money opposition that there has developed. That really came into place at around the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. And it wasn't in place when the Republicans were trying to form and rally around that one issue. So it's not so much that they had a big idea that was important, but they didn't face the obstacles. It's the obstacles that have been in place. Even Teddy Roosevelt faced them, and we may have talked about in the first session. I mean, he actually got more votes as a third-party candidate than actually the candidate for one of the major parties, Taft. So even though he didn't win, he had a lot of success, and yet he faced the kind of hurdles that we see today that have only gotten more. The parties have gotten more and more entrenched. So my basic answer is the absence of those entrenched rules in the first place, as well as the absence of big money that was helping to support the parties.
And by the way, just taking people back, at the time the Republican Party came into existence in the 1850s, there was the Democratic Party and the Whig Party.
Yeah. R.I.P. to the Whigs. So Robin from Ambler says, forget Elon's third party. We already have one, the Forward Party. Mm-hmm. It's 3 years old, making great strides. I would categorize it as moderate, very appealing to those who are exhausted by the extremes on both sides. So there, Lindsay is a fan of the Forward Party, Robin from Ambler.
Yeah,
the Forward,
hi, Robin.
Yeah. I hope she's on the mailing list, by the way. But Lindsay.
Yeah, I'm going to look her up.
Lindsay, make the case for the viability of a third party, given all of the hurdles that Ben laid out.
Yeah.
Why now, and what type of third party could succeed? Give us your vision.
Thanks, Avi. So why now? We are looking at this extraordinary market opportunity right now. Last summer, leading into the November elections, Pew had as a high watermark 51% of Americans actually self-identifying as independents or unaffiliated voters. I know you all have spoken a lot in Pennsylvania about the fact that those independent voters themselves are actually locked out of your primary system there, where you have a closed party primary. So 51% of American voters right now, Pew has it around 43%. Every single day, 10,000 registered voters within the Republican and Democratic parties leave those two parties. So there's this really fascinating development related to the independent voter in America. The question that we all have an opportunity to answer is, why are they leaving and what are they looking for? What is the aspirational vision for change in this country that those independent voters are looking for? And what does it look like to build something that is ideologically inclusive? And, you know, Robin described us at Forward as moderate. And oftentimes people equate terms like centrism or moderation with the idea of being solutions oriented. In fact, if you poll voters across the country, the word moderate actually polls terribly because people equate the idea of moderation with a lack of conviction on particular yep. issues, you know, being, you know, kind of having a policy platform of pudding and nothing, right? So one of the things that I think makes Forward really unique is we are looking at that high watermark of independent voters and building something unique and inclusive for those individuals, and really trying to break out of the idea that if we're using a glossary of terms like centrism or moderation to equate with solutions oriented, how can we shift and start talking to Americans about a new space in politics that isn't defined by progressive policy solutions or conservative policy solutions? What does it look like for us to advance an agenda that actually breaks out of that binary axis? And that's what we're building it Forward. And so we're wanting to bring people in from all across the country, from the bottom up, people like Robin, to help us identify that, build this home for the independent voter.
Is there some point in the future, I don't know if that's a year or 2 years, where you put your stake in the ground, though, around an issue or two, or a policy prescription or two, A, to draw more people mm-hmm. to the movement, yep. but B, to give people a defined sense of what you stand for?
Absolutely. And there, you know, we are both, Avi, we're sprinting right now as a startup and wanting to take advantage of this market opportunity and the fact that the nation's asking for this. Mm-hmm. So you've got all these voters who are registering as independents, but those same voters, 65% of them say they want a new political party.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk proved this through his tweets and his polls. You know, he had 8.3 million people say that we want a new political party. We have been building it for the last 3 years here, but we are building it from the ground up. So it's not for me at national headquarters in Washington, D.C., or for our board to say this is the policy platform for this party. Instead, we are building it for the long term from the ground up to identify what are those galvanizing issues. I talk to pollsters every day. I talk to different pollsters who are starting to engage with independent voters. And I ask them, what are the singular issues that they are focused on? And they don't have the answer to that yeah. right now. NPR and Gallup and the Aspen Ideas Festival did a really neat poll a couple of weeks ago about shared values. What are the dominant values mm-hmm. right now that Americans share? And I think those are conversations we can be having with one another. And then based on the foundation of those values,
yeah.
start to identify the policy issues that folks are really focused on. So that's what we're building it Forward. And that's why it's a marathon. This isn't all going to come together tomorrow.
And by the way, I want to invite you, our listeners, to participate in the conversation. Our big question is, could a third party ever be viable in American politics? And have you ever voted for a third party candidate? You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. Belinda, who is part of the Green Party of Philadelphia, says Americans are hungering for politicians who will actually listen to them on issues like Gaza. Yes, to ranked choice and even some form of proportional representation. I want to bring in a caller. We have Alex from Frenchtown, New Jersey on the line. Alex, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi there. Well, you know, I just wanted to make a comment. I'm an independent voter. I have often wanted to vote for a third party, but, you know, years of political science in college has really taught me that the spoiler effect is real. I feel that a third party simply cannot exist in really any elective democracy where first-past-the-post voting system is the established winner-take-all rule. You know, you've seen the spoiler effect take place throughout American history, such as the Bull Moose Party mentioned earlier on the program, and even in other democracies all over the world, all throughout Africa. In those democracies where a first-past-the-post voting system has existed, it's eventually turned to a two-party system. So I struggle to see the practical viability of a third party unless for some sort of proportional representation or ranked choice voting is implemented.
Yeah.
But, and thank you for the time.
That's Alex from Frenchtown, New Jersey.
By the way, Ben Berger pumped his fist when you said you learned something in college from a political science professor. But Ben, let me ask you that, because like lots of the comments are basically about ranked choice, different forms of voting, proportional representation. Do you see that as the major barrier? Like, I guess weigh that against money as the major barrier to a third party emerging. Is that the big one? Winner take all? Combined with no proportional representation?
It's the big one. Because Elon Musk has got money, but I put his chances at very low. Forward parties raised money. No Labels raised money. Unless, I agree with that last caller and a couple of the people, that unless there's also ranked choice voting and possibly open primaries as well, they often go together, but they're not the same thing, you're not going to solve the problem of democratic illegitimacy and lack of voice in this country because, look, a lot of people view elections kind of like the childhood game, would you rather, like two equally unappealing things. Would you rather lick a busy sidewalk or like be covered in cockroaches? And you got to choose one of them. But the thing is, you don't really have to suffer that fate. In elections and voting, you actually, even if you decide not to vote or vote for a third party, you're going to be licking cockroaches or licking sidewalks. And that's the difficulty, unless you can have ranked choice voting. It's designed to solve that.
By the way, the answer is lick the sidewalk over cockroaches for me, 100 times out of 100.
By the way, I want to just sort of talk about that issue. My follow-up to you, Ben, is, you know, I know in Pennsylvania there's been this effort to sort of open up the primaries because so many voters are disenfranchised during primary voting season. So why not have that? What has been the political will for some of these types of voting reforms? And why do you think these types of things haven't happened?
It's often a political party or two. So in this state, it's been there is a bill by Jared Solomon, a Democrat, to try to get to open primaries. And it's been supported by all the Democrats and rebuffed by all the Republicans. So now, just actually yesterday, four people brought a court case to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania asking, could they possibly, isn't it the case that it denies the state constitution's right to free and fair elections? So it's partisan things, depending on the state. It doesn't have to be a Republican-Democrat thing. Ranked choice voting is somewhat similar as well. It's often people who actually have a desired partisan outcome that are against the idea of it, but it works.
So let me just say, though, we have been talking about all of this from the perspective of winning elections. Mm-hmm. However, there's another role for third parties here, which is shifting the Overton window on an issue or raising an issue that had been ignored. We talked about the forward party, Andrew Yang. He started talking about universal basic income. And I do think that was effective in at least getting some people to talk about that issue of universal basic income. When we look at third parties, Ben Berger, through that lens, the ability to raise the profile of issues, do they already have a role? Could they have a bigger role? Let's dissect that.
They do, and they did as far back as Bull Moose, the Progressive Party of Teddy Roosevelt, because a number of his policy reforms that he wanted to see put in place were eventually adopted not by the Republican Party, which he had left, but by Woodrow Wilson and the Democrats. So yes, it absolutely can. We saw Ross Perot beating on the issue of debt reduction, and then Bill Clinton for a short time passed balanced budget. So it absolutely has and can influence it. It's just a very expensive way to do it is one thing, making a party to do that. People don't usually like to keep voting for something and then have it lose, even if eventually one or two of their issues get adopted. So that's the best thing you can say about it right now.
Short shelf life. Yeah. Also, on that note, the Musk strategy of pursuing a few vulnerable seats or swing seats, that I don't really recall happening much historically. Maybe it has. Do you think that's a path, you know, picking a few Senate races, you know, House races and going from there?
For sure. He cited the ancient Greek general Epaminondas and said, well, this guy, he did it right because he hit the Spartans in one particularly vulnerable spot. Yeah. It seems to me that's what parties always do. They always try to flip vulnerable seats at elections. So he's really talking about just that, but doing it in a small way. He might be able to avoid filing with the FEC if he does not become a national party, but only goes for individual states. That's an advantage as well. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I would say is you don't need a political party to do that. Teddy, in the last half hour, said he could merge with with an existing party trying to do that. Mm-hmm. He could be like Grover Norquist and try to start up a group like American for Tax Reform that threatens to primary Republicans who don't do what he wants to do. Each of those things is easier and more cost-effective than starting a new party. Mm,
interesting.
Yeah. I want to read a couple comments. David on YouTube says, never Trump Republicans need another choice. That is the spoiler effect. Wayne says, I think there is room for even more than three parties. The interesting thing is that with our two-party system, we have similar gridlock to that of Italy that has dozens of political parties. I want to bring in a caller. We have Kim from Collingswood on the line. Kim, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My comment really is I think that there's a lot of distraction around issues that divide us. And I also think that that folks get very impatient about their particular issue that they feel very passionate about, when I think that if we focus on one major issue of the haves and the have-nots, a lot of the other cultural issues will follow, but we need to prioritize income inequality right now, because that needs to come first before we can be focusing on things like the other cultural, social issues that have divided progressives in this country, or like a moderate progressive saying, having some, you know, anti-trans in sports view, right? And then that drives them away from the bigger picture of a progressive movement that is redistributing wealth in this country. And I think that if we can get behind and build that, those other cultural issues will follow, but that needs to come first to bring everyone together.
And by the way, I want to bring in another caller, Charles from Northeast Philly's on the line. Charles, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I just wanted to stress that it's not a lack of third party choices that's the problem. It's the two parties that have blocked for decades any access to ballot, reasonable access to ballot, have thwarted the parties in court cases with partisan decisions, have blocked them from debates. We need to have reform of rules. Instant runoff voting is a great start to that, but access to debates and other things.
Yeah.
And looking at Cuomo's and now third party run is a good case for that, where he's in the game to basically be a spoiler. He knows the calculus on that, and he's in there to disrupt the race. And that old politics needs to go. Instead, runoff voting in the general election in New York would resolve that.
Thank you. So that's Charles from Northeast Philly. And so, Lindsay, I want you to respond to that and also talk about a little bit about some of the issues you've seen in trying to build a party from the ground up that have sort of kept, you know, you out of the big fray and being able to, you know, to have a bigger, I guess, footprint across the political spectrum. What have been some of the challenges that you've seen?
Yeah, thanks, Cherry. I think one of the things that I want to bring up is everyone keeps talking about a third party and a spoiler effect. 87% of congressional districts are decidedly red or blue. They're decided in the primary. There's actually not a choice at the general election. And if you look at states like Massachusetts or Utah, where there is not a second competitive party, there is a great opportunity to introduce competition into our political system by becoming the second party. And so in Utah, we did just that at Forward. And I'll talk about some of our successes there, Cherry, and then talk about some of the challenges whereas Professor Berger's outlined, where the two-party system has raised the barrier for entry very intentionally. So in Utah, we were able to achieve ballot access through a signature collection effort. We have really strong state leads on the ground. It is a party that was built from the ground up. We then merged with another party. So that is part of Formula's success story, is how can we find opportunities to merge with other parties to build consensus and start to catalyze growth opportunities. So we merged with the United Utah Party. Their candidate last year for attorney general in Utah's phenomenal. Her name's Michelle Quist. She's taken over as our state party chair there. That momentum created inspired a sitting senator in the Utah State Senate to switch parties. He was elected as a Republican. He left and re-registered as a Democrat. So that kind of fulcrum strategy that you're referencing that Elon Musk is starting to talk about, picking off individuals, that's something that Ford has been doing. And we did in Utah with State Senator Thatcher. That is a real possibility in the United States House of Representatives and in the Senate. And what I think is unique about how Ford is envisioning that is it's not about the comma letter after your name. It's about a commitment to caucusing together and working together and to look at the party leadership on the extremes and say, look, the eight of us together are more powerful than you are. And if that looks like in your backyard, a Brian Fitzpatrick, Don Davis in North Carolina, Seth Moulton in Massachusetts, Marie Glusenkamp-Perez in Washington State, these are the folks who are already looking for each other on the floor of the House of Representatives. They're the ones who are already loosely working together to find opportunities for consensus. What does it look like for us to create a formal off-ramp and create the political will for that behavior? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're looking to build it forward and to go into some of these congressional districts where there actually is no competition. You know, there's 520,000 seats for elected office around the country, and everybody's talking about the presidential, but 70% of those races go uncontested, which means there actually is no competition. So to introduce a new political party that can build the infrastructure to run those candidates is a huge opportunity for us. But let's look at a state like New York, because you were just talking about the mayoral race in the city. We are, and I talk about us coming, you know, bringing other parties together, and that's really part of our culture and DNA at Forward. Andrew Yang's Forward Party that he launched in 2021 merged in 2022 with two other organizations. One was called the Serve America Movement. And New Yorkers might remember a woman named Stephanie Miner who ran for governor in New York. She did so as a Serve America candidate. She was a SAM candidate.
Yeah.
Okay. So they achieved ballot access, recruited a candidate, did all the right things that, that Ben's talking about is so difficult. And then what did the Democratic-led legislature do the next cycle? As soon as they were in session, they raised the barrier for entry for signature requirements and said, if you want to be a political party, you have to field a presidential candidate. They knocked Sam off the ballot.
Yeah.
They knocked
and so that's Green the challenge. The yeah.
Yeah. Because they could, they make the rules of the road.
Yeah.
But as soon as we make progress, they raise the barrier.
Yeah. 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 And so that's a huge challenge. It's like Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill. But Ben, one thing I think that is interesting here that this discussion raises is a different tactic, maybe a third path here, which is you look at places like Philadelphia where one of the major parties is not competitive. And then you look at an individual race and say, hey, Republicans, would you stand down and say the DA's race or the mayor's race here in Philadelphia while we, some other group, field a moderate candidate under a third party banner without Republicans shaving off any votes and try to unite this sort of like center right block in Philadelphia? It could be a center left block, right, in another city or another municipality. And that's kind of maybe what Cuomo's trying to do in New York City. Does that potentially make more sense, you know, trying to look for those opportunities?
It has happened in a few cases where independents have actually been able to run a candidate instead of one of the other.
Right.
The parties thought, yes, we don't have a shot at it, for sure. It's just that I think it's unlikely to make the kind of systemic change.
Right.
I mean,
it's more one-offy.
Exactly. And and we're talking here about what Musk brought up here, which he was saying, well, there's a problem and a gridlock issue and a control by both parties, really. How do you break that? Well, that's not going to get broken by what we're talking about, although it's a nice thing when it happens.
Gary says, keep in mind, we do have that Working Families Party, major player in three states and spreading. And of course, they've got a couple members on city council here in Philadelphia.
And then my question is sort of tied to that. It's sort of because Ross Douthat wrote in the New York Times that a more reliably blue or red state is more likely to feature a persistent exasperation with the ruling party. Like, so a city like Philadelphia, where the 70% plus of the people are, you know, Democrat, there's a section of that that it does not agree with the ruling party. Is that an opportunity for a third party to, like the Working Family Party here in Philadelphia, to sort of glom onto those folks and pull them into a whole new party?
I saw his piece, and he was, I think, also questioning correctly, as you're implying, what Musk had said about targeting these particular vulnerable, because swing states are the ones where the parties pour their money into
and
make it more difficult to win there. And so it's a place, he was suggesting Kentucky and Maryland, I think, as possible places. But I like your point about Philadelphia, too. Those are good strategies. They tend to be more local. And so it's one thing I like about what Forward has actually done is they have gone and tried to build up local coalitions, local and state. And that's where a lot of politics happen. And we shouldn't forget that.
Yeah, Matt says, I have no problem with closed primaries as long as the public doesn't pay for them. If a party wants to have closed primaries, let them do it on their own dime. As we start to wrap up this conversation, though, Ben, a lot of people will point to European parliamentary systems where you might have more parties in name. And yet, when I look at those election results, at the end of the day, the coalition that wins in, like, the UK is either going to be led by Labour or Conservatives, right? I just wonder how much of a difference it really makes, even if people even get to cast a vote for a third party and get some proportional representation, but the prime minister still ends up coming from one of two parties. Does that actually make much of a difference materially?
What it can mean is sometimes fringe groups that are a very small percentage of the population can get one policy that they really want. There's an open
leverage.
It's leverage for them. It's an open question as to whether everyone benefits.
Right.
So it's, you know what? It's would you rather our system and theirs? They both have some really negative things about them. That's why I think I'm not looking to go to parliamentary. I actually think that ranked choice and open primaries is a way that would give us more choices and help us to actually broaden the kind of candidates that we get and moderate. People are nicer when they do ranked choice. That's what happened with Mamdani and Lander in New York City. It was ranked choice, and they actually co-endorsed each other.
They patted each other on the back.
And it brings more people into the fold, not just with the party. So we're going to have to leave it there. And so we want to say thank you to Ben Berger, professor of political science and executive director of the Land Center for Civic and Social Responsibility at Swarthmore College. And thank you to Lindsay Williams-Strath, the CEO of the Forward Party. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
It's always a party here at Studio 2. One more dad joke before we end the hour. Our Studio 2 party is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. My name is Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg, who loves a party. There you go.
We got a party tonight, by the way. We're doing our pop culture trivia showdown today
in Wayne.
Very excited for that. So if you're coming tonight, we really look forward to seeing you. It's our first one, hopefully the first of many. Thanks for joining us on Studio 2. We'll see you soon.